Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
You're listening to Escape Adulthood with Kim and Jason. It's February 28th, 2008, and this is show number 28. On today's show, we interview Frida Wara, an adventurous woman who describes snow as her favorite toy and was part of the first all-female unsupported expedition team to ski to the North Pole. We also talk about the rise of adventure travel, mismatched gloves, and recap the first ever Kim and Jason escape event.
Take me back to when I was a child, when everything was good enough, it was good enough for the wild. Coyote sleeps in the moonlight, rabbit goes by the day, snake winds around on a hot afternoon, and eagle flies on his way. Take me back now if you can. Take me back now to the land. People sleep in the moonlight, the children run in the daylight, and that feeling never dies, but it may go away for a while.
Welcome to the Escape Adulthood Podcast Show, your number one source for long-lasting, fast-acting, physician-approved adultitis relief. This is Jason with my wife Kim, saying hi from Studio 315 in Madison, Wisconsin. You can get in touch with us by sending an email to podcast@kimandjason.com. or giving us a call at 608-554-0803. Well, I got to say, we have a great show today.
I know. I'm so excited.
I was very excited last show when we talked to the guy who makes candy, Eric Wessner. This is going to be another good one.
We can't overhype it, but it's going to be great.
Yeah. It's going to be the most awesomest.
Let's not overhype.
Okay.
Yeah. But it is really
cool. It'll be all right. So it's good. It fits perfectly because it's winter, right in the throes of winter. Hopefully we're going to get to the tail end soon enough. But yeah, we have someone who doesn't want winter to end.
No, so she loves snow.
Very refreshing perspective. And we will get to that a little bit later in the show. Okay, Kimberly, I have the mind bender question for you.
Okay.
About how many inches of snowfall does Antarctica receive per year?
Antarctica. How many inches of snowfall?
South Pole, we're talking here. Just to give you some perspective, where the Madison, Wisconsin, we're over, I think, 80 inches.
Yes.
So far this winter, which is a new record, so.
Right. And this is the South Pole, which, you know, the North Pole is the cold one, right? Is South really cold, too?
I hear they're both fairly cold.
They're
yes.
both very, very cold?
Yeah.
I think so, because they're the poles. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to go with 250.
250. That's a bold claim.
Well, if Madison had, like, what did you say, 72?
I think we're over 80.
Yeah. Over 80. 72, I think, was the record
that
got broken. Then I think about three times as much at the poles.
So what is that?
250? Is this way off?
250. Just want to jot that down.
Oh, great.
Okay, well, we'll reveal the answer at the end of the show. Just want to take this moment to remind everyone to subscribe to this show in iTunes. Also, if you have any comments, questions, or feedback on how to make the show better, let us know. Send us an email at podcast@kimandjason.com, or you can give us a call on our Skype line at 608-554-0803. Always appreciate people leaving reviews of the show in iTunes, which is very easy to do. You can go to the search box, type in Escape Adulthood, and you should find us.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Hello, Americans. This is Paul Harvey. Stand by for news.
Good evening. Here is the news for Palace.
I look good. I mean, really good.
Hey, everyone! Come and see how good I look!
Got some news for us, Kim?
I do. This is very interesting. I have an article from the McClatchy Tribune from today, actually, and it's entitled Adventure Travel on the Rise by Megan Scott. Now, forget the tan, the Mickey Mouse photos, and the cliche souvenirs. These days, travelers want to experience something more than the gated resort and the cruise ship buffet. They want to go on a walking tour, climb a mountain, or kayak down a river. Adventures that can make a vacation more meaningful. In travel, people are increasingly seeking the authentic, unique experiences that stretch the imagination and create potent memories that last a lifetime, says Chris Doyle, Vice President of the Adventure Travel Trade Association. According to the organization, adventure travel is the fastest growing segment of the leisure travel industry. Of course, adventure is in the eye of the beholder, and it ranges from walking tours to whitewater rafting. But because of that, it remains relatively unaffected by the weak dollar and economic downturn. So the article goes on to share, I believe, seven different categories of adventure travel.
Okay.
So I won't go and read them, you know, in depth, but it is very interesting to see what people are choosing. The seven are the action-packed vacations. Like, these are the ones that were highlighted, in the bucket list, where you have IndyCar racing, skydiving, rappelling, and piloting a primary combat trainer aircraft. Then you've got the girlfriend getaways, which is what we're going to talk about with Frida. Coming up here, where women are going together and doing, you know, adventurous things. And the cool thing, it says more than 50% of adventure travels are women, and most fall between ages 41 and 60, according to a survey. And it said, we used to think of active holidays for 20-somethings, but an online travel resource for women says that now it's not unheard of for 50 and 6-year-olds to be going kayaking, mountain climbing, and surfing.
Cool.
So that's kind of what we're hearing about from Frida today. Mm-hmm. Then we've got volunteer vacations, where people go and volunteer their time and do some adventurous things. You've got expeditionary travel, which is, you know, anything from surveying coral reefs on a remote Bohemian island, or feeding and caring for cheetahs and Namibia. Okay.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
To feed and care for cheetahs.
Then you've got charity travel, which Jason and I have actually looked into, where you're going, in far off places to raise awareness or learn more about certain organizations, often orphanages or things with children. Then you've got family adventure vacations. Now, this is kind of cool. I guess, you know, they're saying that baby boomers who have the means to travel, coupled with a strong interest in bonding more deeply, are doing things like dude ranches, houseboat rentals, whitewater rafting, and horseback packing trips. Hmm. So that's a little bit different.
Yeah.
Soft adventure vacations are usually kind of based on a theme, maybe like a culinary tour in Asia or wine vacations in Israel. Then you've got expedition cruising, which is, you hear a lot of people going to Alaska or Antarctica, Galapagos, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then the last one is roots vacations. I thought this was kind of cool. People who are traveling to the places where their ancestors lived and trying to track their roots a little bit deeper.
What is that credit card commercial where they go to, they go to Scotland or something,
yeah,
and they figure out that they really aren't
Scottish. Right, so. But they had a good time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's all these different categories, and of course, each one is just made up of tons of things, of possibilities underneath. But the cool concept I thought was neat about this article is just kind of opened your eyes to, you know, it's not just about Disney anymore, and it's not just about, you know, the family vacation that you always thought of.
Mm-hmm.
And people are going for something a little bigger. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know. Maybe people have a little bit more money. They have the capability to do some of the stuff. Maybe they're just tired of the same old, same old.
Right.
You know, I think there's a definite trend where people are kind of getting tired of the cookie cutter suburb mentality where, you know, we see that a lot. We travel around the country for speaking engagements, and a lot of it is always the same.
Right. And the towns look exactly the same.
There's a trend towards doing something unique,
mm-hmm,
something that not everyone else is doing. And I think that's cool. I think that's a good thing. Sign me up for all of those.
I know. And the cool thing is, I know you said, you know, maybe people have more money. A lot of the things I mentioned were the ones that cost more money, but a lot of them really aren't that expensive either, where it's just like backpacking in Montana or something, or, you know, where it's probably going to be cheaper than Disney, you know?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is there's the book that is on the bestseller list. I don't know if it still is, but that 4-Hour Work Week.
Yeah.
And it was written by Tim Ferriss, and he talked, you know, about how you can get down some of the hours that you typically work, and he's, you know, all about working wherever you want to go, going wherever you want to go, traveling, stuff like that. And he talks a lot about how it's actually cheaper to go places than you think.
Right.
You know, people think about, oh, I'm going to go around the world and I'm going to save up for 10 years and retire.
Or when I retire, right?
But, you know, you can do a lot of stuff in a lot of different countries that is cheaper than you think. So that's another piece, too, is some of these vacations might sound very extravagant and expensive, and I bet they're probably more reasonable than you would think.
That's a good point. So I would definitely encourage the listeners to check out the article because, like I said, each category has a lot more under it, and it's kind of neat to pick out and add to your life list, right? Add to that bucket list of what you're going to do in the next 5, 10, even the next year, you know? Oh,
and one of the things we talk about in our programs is the idea, and this was a quote from a guy named Dan Burris, who said, you know, we need to create a widely diversified portfolio of unforgettable memories. And
exactly.
I think that, you know, we spend a lot of time saving money and working on our financial portfolios, but the memory side of things, that's just as important, if not more so. When you get to the end of your life, you look back on all of the cool things and the experiences that you shared with your loved ones, that's the stuff that really matters.
Yep. Your money can be gone in an instant, but your memories will never leave you.
Yep. So.
Okay, we have totally, you know, hyped it up, and here it finally is, our interview with Frida. Enjoy it. She has to be the most adventurous, childlike person that I know, and she admits in the interview that she's 52 years old, so it's not the 20-somethings that you always think about going doing these crazy things, you know?
Yep. Enjoy.
Frida Wara is a small woman with a big passion. She's an inspirational speaker, adventurer, and a leadership and teamwork expert. Following a big dream in 2001, she skied to the top of the world with a team of 11 other women to become the first all-female unsupported expedition from Russia, Russian ice, to the top of the world, the geographic North Pole. Snow is her favorite toy. Her message of focus, resiliency, and determination in the face of insurmountable odds inspires people all over the world to go to the top of the world and to navigate the unfamiliar and chaotic waters of change. Her mantra is nothing significant ever happens alone. Thank you so much, Frida, for being here. We're so excited to talk with you today.
Oh, it's great to talk with you and Jason, too.
This is exciting and very fitting because we live in Madison, of course, and we are setting records left and right for snowfall, and it can be very easy to get bummed out about it, but you call snow your favorite toy, so who better to talk about this
in February?
In February,
kind of
than
like,
you.
You bet, and you know, doesn't snow make everything fun? I mean, your driveway is just your driveway. And then it snows, and, I mean, it's a sledding hill, or,
yeah.
You know, everything happens. It's you know, where else can you look at something, and it's beautiful, and it's fun to play with? You can sculpt it into all kinds of crazy things. And best of all, it covers up all the yard work that you don't want to do yet.
There you go. That's a way to look at
it. Such a good perspective, Frida. It is. Now, I'm sure after reading, you know, the intro here, a lot of people are like, what happened in 2001? So tell us about this first all-female unsupported expedition team to the North Pole. You were at the North Pole?
Yep, I was there, the geographic North Pole. A lot of kids asked me if I saw Santa.
I was just going to ask that.
Yeah, you know what, Jason? In fact, if I would have had your list, I could have probably tried to take two in for you. But... really, I think Santa is at the geographic North Pole, which is about 800 miles south, at the magnetic North Pole, which is about 800 miles south of the geographic. So I did not see him, but I am going to be seeing some reindeer shortly, so I figured if, you know, I can do any kind of reindeer talk, maybe I'll get this inside scoop on the big guy, and, you know, I'll put in the good word for you.
We appreciate that.
Jason needs all the help he can get.
Yeah.
So. That is so cool. So 11 of you went up there. Now tell us about, what was that like?
Well, actually there was a team of 12.
Okay.
Now imagine going to the mall with, 11 other girlfriends. You know, how do you stick together?
Right.
It is a challenge. And so basically it's sort of like the mall without any windows. You know, there was nothing to
shop for. Yeah.
But to tell you the truth, the whole idea happened 7 years earlier. In January of 1994, I have another friend who's a freelance writer, and she got a call from some folks in Chicago who were planning the first all-female expedition to the North Pole with dog teams. Mm-hmm. And they called my friend Dixie, and they said, Dixie, could you go along and chronicle it as an outdoor journalist? And Dixie said, y'all don't understand, I'm from East Texas, I just live in the Upper Peninsula, and that's not my idea of a fun assignment. I've got this girlfriend, and I know she'll do it, and I, you know, everything in my life stacked up for that expedition. I didn't know it, and I think maybe in life we really just have this giant jigsaw puzzle, and you start off, you know, first of all, just turning over all the pieces, and then you go all the straight edge. The straight edge is kind of like building your life and your marriage and going to school, getting a job, making mortgage payments, making car payments, figuring out what's the cheapest insurance out there. And then pretty soon you start putting pieces in the middle. And they come in big globs, leaving mm-hmm. lots of weird open shapes. And you wonder how it's all going to glue together. I mean, really, how does this all come together? You don't see the big picture. And then all of a sudden, something can just startle you right out of your elevator music life, and it's as simple as a phone call and an ask. Would you like to chronicle the first all-female expedition to the North Pole? And, you know, I'm built a little bit like a refrigerator to begin with, and I always loved snow, and I had been mushing dogs. I'm really hooked on sled dog racing, and this Saturday begins the Iditarod, and I think that is just the premier adventure of life. Wow. And so it just sounded right. But as all Arctic expeditions, and if you read about Shackleton and Amundsen and Perry and Scott, you learn about patience and persistence, and that original expedition fell apart, but we held on to the dream. And you know, the 1990s through the year 2001, to hold on to a dream for 7 years.
Wow.
What are you, nuts?
Yeah, that's persistence right there. Wow.
But when it grips you and you can't let go, it's sort of like a flu bug, and you just have to weather it out. And it was the culmination of a long, long dream. And I think when I speak to folks, that's the other thing I like to tell them, is that your dream might come from some really weird place, but you'll know when it's right. It's kind of like when you meet the person you're going to marry. You just know it's right.
Yeah.
And it might not happen all at once, but if you stick, you can accomplish your wildest dream.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. That is amazing.
So how long did it take?
We were on the Arctic Ocean for 27 days.
Wow.
And it's really hard to even talk about a day there, because we went in April when it's 24 hours of daylight. So the sun does a lot of things in our life. I mean, it brightens our day, makes us feel good. But when it goes behind the horizon, you know when to rest. And we also use it for compass. There it was 23 degrees off the horizon, nonstop, 24/7. And instead of just going across the sky east to west, it circled us. So we were kind of living already in a really weird space.
Yeah.
Nothing else alive, because there's nothing there. It's an ocean.
Wow.
So you're out there in the middle of this white world with a blue dome, the sun just circling you. And I think that made it, even though it was 30 degrees below zero, I think it made it much more of a mental challenge than a physical one.
Hmm. That's interesting.
I would imagine it's got to be almost like time standing still, with it's just being there the same way all the time.
Like you're on a set of a movie or something.
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, exactly, Jason. That's exactly how it feels. And I think, you know, when you climb a mountain, when you summit Everest, or if you come to Marquette and just summit Hogback with me, we see something different. We you know, you get up to an altitude and you look out and everything's different. The lake looks small. There's an itty-bitty kayak going by. The trees are so different. But there, we worked so hard to reach this goal that had been in our hearts for, you know, not only this journey, but for however long we've been wanting to, you know, put the expedition together. And you get there. You reach the top of the world, which the only thing you know is by looking at a GPS that you're at 90 degrees north. Hmm. And the worst part about it is it looks exactly like where you started.
Oh. Not so much the summit of Mount Everest or something like that, huh?
Right.
Oh,
it's like,
man.
And I remember climbing up on, you know, just a little bitty kind of a pressure ridge there, which is maybe only, you know, half a story high, and trying to get some perspective on what I had just done.
Right.
I mean, big deal. What is this?
Wow.
And then realize that it's never about the destination. It's always about the journey.
Hmm. Man, that if there's not a lesson that's more fitting for that line,
yeah,
it's that. Holy cow, Frida.
Yeah, well, especially getting there and nothing is different, and then you realize Santa's house is not there, so that had to
Jason's
be a bummer.
Jason's still stuck on Santa. Can we
I mean, I was like, Mrs. Claus has got to have cocoa and cookies.
Come on.
Give
can
me
we
something.
The toy shop
just
or something.
The GPS telling me that I'm here.
Wow.
But, no, that's really cool. That's a great line of that it is perfect. It's all about the journey.
And then how many days back, I mean, once you got there, how long of a journey back was it?
Well, we were major wussies at that point. we did not ski back.
Okay.
We tested our team, and that's one of the things I like to talk about, too, is teamwork, because we were pretty much the Mighty Ducks.
Okay.
We were 12 women, ranging in age from 26 to 52.
Wow.
We came from all backgrounds. We weren't professional skiers. In fact, I remember our leader, José Eau Claire, a French-Canadian and a national champion in Canada cross-country skier. She was remarkable. But I remember her telling me, you know, Frida, can you ski better? And I thought, you know, with gravity, I do great. I mean, I love the alpine ski. I mean, I'm fast.
Yeah.
I've got the physics right down. But this long, arduous stuff of just, you know, shuffling along on this ice sheet, it's not the fun that you might expect.
Right.
But
I'm sure it gets romanticized.
Right.
Yeah.
But it still starts to unravel things in your life, and that's when you face your values.
Mm.
So I think always for people that, you know, people that get hooked in marathoning of any sort, they'll tell you that it starts to become... Well, they say it's the endorphins, but really it's where you get an opportunity to go in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a valuable space. And sometimes, you know, you're living there in your head, but you don't necessarily have the right combination to unlock that door.
That's a really great point, because we, you know, in today's day and age with everything so fast-paced and busy, you can go weeks without ever really getting into your head.
I mean,
and really just kind of reflecting and getting to that level. And so I could see where that's a huge blessing to be able to get to that point and just...
be there.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And see what comes from it.
I think that's what's going to draw me next week. I have to keep reminding myself of that, but this next journey is going to be more miles than I've ever put on my body day after day. And I think I got to keep reminding myself, and you know, anyone that's dealing with making it through that chemotherapy session, or making it through radiation, or going through physical therapy after a knee replacement, or, you know, those kinds of things, those people know how strong your mind has to be to carry you through those places.
Mm-hmm.
Which has nothing to do with not being a child, because I think kids can tap into their mind even faster than we can.
Well,
we kind of get all clogged down with all the things we think we have to do, and we don't get straight to the point like they can.
Exactly.
So tell us a little bit about the next week.
Yeah.
What's going on next week? What's next on your horizon here?
Last March, I was with a bunch of girlfriends again, and we were at Stokely Creek, which is a beautiful cross-country ski area north of Sault Ste. Marie, Canada. And we were skiing, and one of the gals was telling us about truly cross-country skiing. And we had just finished a 28-kilometer it was called the Wobble Stoppet, where they take you up on the snow train, drop you off at a little whistle stop, and then you ski back to Stokely and had big bowls of chili. I always liked the food at the end of the trail. That's kind of yeah, the lore for me. Cookies along the way work really well, too.
Hey, and, anything.
You know, the idea of going point to point under your own power, and I love it. I love kayaking for weeks on end. I mean, I've gone for 6 days in my kayak on Lake Superior before I ever saw another person, and wow. I love that feeling that, wow. you know, you could almost forget what century you're in.
I bet.
And we kind of got hooked on this idea that for 25 years, they have been skiing border to border in Finland. So we'll be skiing from Russia, Kuusamo, on the Finnish border with Russia, to Tornio, Finland, on the Swedish border. And I live in a great ski community, but only one weekend out of the whole year can we even lay down a 51-kilometer point-to-point trail during our Nokaymenon ski marathon, and it goes from Ishpeming to Marquette. And to imagine a country that lays a 440-kilometer trail, immaculately groomed because the Finns are just that way, and then 400 people, 100 people per day, get to launch off and stretch their legs, crossing
wow.
the whole country.
Oh, my goodness, Rita. Are you totally jazzed?
You know, I'm a little nervous. I made some changes to my skis. I got to try those out yet tonight. And really, you know, this is going to be a lot more work. It's not like the pole where we were moving very slowly. Mm. This is going to be a lot more miles, you know, on my legs and lungs. But to come across and to meet all of these new villages and, you know, to ski into them and maybe see some reindeer on the way that I'm hoping I can last through and get a free ride for a while.
Wow. So, and then, like, how does it work? Like, how many days do you think it'll be, or is it kind of just vary? You're not sure?
It's pretty much just a week.
Okay.
So that's why the miles are pretty high.
Okay.
We'll ski between 46 and 84 kilometers a day, and I don't know my kilometers that well, so I had to go to a chart to figure it out. The longest day we'll be skiing 52 miles.
Okay.
Now, I have never run a 26-mile marathon, but this will be like a double marathon, except on skis, you've got glide.
Okay.
But it's going to be
a
long distance to do. And then we do stay in a variety of places, anything from a 4-star hotel to a schoolhouse where we sleep on the floor and they've got an outhouse. And, you know, we'll be eating some reindeer stew and lots of oatmeal, I bet.
Okay.
And they promise us a sauna every night. Now, when I say that word sauna, you know I'm a Finn, so. And sauna is like going to church, so I think whatever ails me at the end of the day, I'll be able to take it there and hopefully remedy it to get back on the horse the next day.
Oh, boy, that'll feel good each night. That is so cool. And you'll be with your husband, correct?
Yep. Okay. And actually, that's the neat thing is that there's going to be 9 of us from our community, from Marquette, going, and somehow I talked them into doing the same thing. It's contagious.
It is. Well, that's what we talked about with this adultitis-free lifestyle stuff that we talked about, which is what you're demonstrating. It's like it's so contagious. Once you start having fun and stressing less, and this adventurous side, I'm sure, is similar, where people are hearing about your journeys coming back and saying, well, I want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, we have a program, and they do in Wisconsin. Actually, I believe it was founded in Wisconsin. It's called Becoming an Outdoors Woman. And just this past weekend, we had our annual winter BOW, and it was so great to see women shoveling up big mounds of snow, carving them out, and they slept in them. They made their own snow shelters, their Quincy's. And, you know, women that are well into their 40s, 50s, and they're out there just acting like a kid again, and it will change your life.
That is so cool.
So in all of your adventures, what would you say is the craziest or perhaps most remarkable experience that you've had?
Boy, that is a big question. I think it might still be to come. I think many times when you just do a crazy mountain bike, it seems you come home so muddy. You know it's a mountain bike when you're cleaning out your mirrors for a week.
Yeah.
And just, you know, some of those fun times when you're whoop-de-dooing. I think the Polar Trek didn't quite have those same whoop-de-doo moments, although one of the goofiest things that happened was that we trained for a bit on the Arctic Ocean at an ice station, Borneo, which is run by some Russians who actually operate the camp for people that go to the Arctic Ocean in April to study the weather patterns. And they at first thought, you know, looking at us, that the Arctic Ocean is no place for American woman. but they watched us train, and after a few days, they thought, you know, they can do this. Hmm. And one of our days on the ice, it was skiing through a salvage yard. I mean, it was like skiing through skim milk, because when the ice opens up and opens up into this fresh lead, obviously that water is going to turn into fog. Mm. So you can't see up or down, and you're skiing through all this broken ice. And when you're really, really rich in life, you can take a helicopter ride to the North Pole, and when you get there, you can dance around and drink some champagne and then boogie back home. And they were taking some very wealthy clients to the North Pole, and they flew over our tracks. And because they were concerned, we were sort of like their cousins or their sisters, they put down, and I remember you can hear a helicopter long before you can see it. So we could hear that they were approaching us, and we were looking up in the sky, and then when we saw them, we waved, and then they sat down, and we thought, oh no, something's happened, or maybe they misinterpreted our gestures thinking we were in trouble. And when our leader skied over to them, they were just frantic, saying, are you all right? Are you all right? We see your tracks. Are you all right? No one went swimming. Mm. Like, no, we're fine. We're fine. Does anyone need to go back? And we were like, well, first of all, there's no way in the world that anyone alive, not any one of us women alive, would even dare think about going back with those 12 horny Russians, you know, and we didn't do that. But, you know, there was definitely not anything serious on our part, but they were so concerned. And Jose convinced them we were fine, and that's when Igor, the pilot, said, well, here, take the vodka. And he comes skiing back with his Cheshire grin on her face. I mean, she was just laughing and cracking up and, look, at this, what they gave us, you know, and here's this bottle of vodka. And, of course, we had to be totally unsupported, so we couldn't open at that point.
Right.
But we laughed thinking that that was the most expensive vodka in the world, not because of the contents, but certainly because of the delivery charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That is so fun. Wow.
Now, where did this... You know, we talk about, you know, like, Madison, we've had all this snow. And I have to say that you are as refreshing as you are rare. Because this excitement for the snow, I wish it was contagious on me. Where did this come from? Have you always had this adventurous spirit? Did your parents support you as a kid? Where did all this come from?
Well, first of all, my name has enough A's in it that you can tell my nationality. And Finns love winter. And Finns embrace winter. In fact, in the Winter War of 1939, it was the Finns' ability to adapt to winter that helped them stave off the Russians for 3 months. 20,000 Finns held off 1 million Russians because they knew how to ski and they knew how to stay warm and what to eat. My father was a fabulous skier. He married a woman from Mississippi.
Mississippi.
And I think, well, they married in 1945, and I think my mom was probably the first woman from all Mississippi to learn to ski. She adapted to it, and actually, if you look at my nose, you can tell I was conceived on a ski trip. So it's from the very beginning. I met my husband skiing. He also beamed me in the head with a snowball, and I've never been the same since. Our children, unfortunately, it was very sad that as soon as they could walk, they were on skis. And now it means that they live very far away from us.
Right.
They're not in Marquette. Our son is a professional snowboarder in Truckee, California. And our daughter chose her college on skis, the ability to ski, and she's on the ski patrol at Big Sky, Montana. Hmm. She's a senior at Montana State in Bozeman. I think there is something innate about just loving winter. Our daughter was about 13 years old. I had to pick her up from a overnight pajama party with a bunch of girls, and I had to pick her up to go to ski racing practice at our little market mountain here, and it was single digits, gray, early January, and she wasn't happy. And when you're 13 years old and you're not happy, you're going to make sure nobody else is happy either.
Yes, they will.
It's one of their best talents.
And she plunked in the back seat and she said, "Mom, you act like skiing is more important than school." And I very calmly just said, "Oh, it is." I could see her eyes. I mean, you know, they were as big as golf balls in the back seat. Like, huh?
Right.
I knew I had to follow it up, and I said, "Erica, the most precious places I can take you on this planet, you must ski to see." And I guarantee you, Kim and Jason, if you came to Marquette and you and I put on some skis and I took you on a trail, the two of you would be acting like you had stars in your eyes and that you were walked onto the set of a Disney movie, because there is nothing that makes this landscape more magical than snow.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be flying up to visit you.
I love it. You better.
You sold us.
And when there's a full moon, there is nothing better.
I bet. That is so cool.
Do you... maybe this is the wrong question, but do you still have the motherly side where you're concerned about the safety part of things with your kids, or is it kind of like they'll be fine?
Especially some of these ramps that your son ends up on that you told us about.
This watching these snowboarders is fascinating, but I always wonder, how do you practice that? Because you can't land
harnesses?
It on the first try. Yeah.
I don't think so.
Oh, we're paying for it dearly. And please, don't turn me into child social services. They know me and Marquette. They know what this is all about. In fact, our son, Ian, when he graduated high school, he told my mother that he wasn't going to get his graduation picture. He's not going to have a senior picture. And she said, "But Ian, you're my only grandson." "All right, Grand. But if I'm going to get, I'm not doing it with a tie and a suit pole, none of that." He said, "I want to be upside down on the trampoline." Well, the challenges of getting a photographer, thank goodness we have Andy Gregg in Marquette. He's a fabulous photographer, patient. He got the most spectacular picture. And actually, if you Google Ian Thorley, you will find that picture. They still have it, I think, on the web somewhere. Not the Ian Thorley in England or Scotland. It's Ian Thorley, the snowboarder.
Okay.
But It's a great question. We've always had a trampoline in the backyard, even long before we had children. Ron and I believe that balance is as important in your physical fitness as your aerobics, your flexibility, and your strength. We really believe balance. And if you don't hone balance at an early age, you know, I just spent the weekend teaching women how to cross-country ski, and I could see if women didn't spend a lot of time on skates or a bike or something that would work their balance. And growing up, the kids had a free rein. That trampoline was out there teaching them body awareness. And the thing we had to bite our tongue about, my husband and I could never say to our children to be careful.
Right.
I mean, how many times does a parent say, "Be careful"?
Right.
I mean, it's like, I probably have bit off two-thirds of my tongue. You can't say that.
Right.
Because from the get-go, everything they did was dangerous.
Who are they learning this from, Frida?
but you know, what we did tell them was trust your instincts. And Ian, we saw that in him last November, the first weekend of November. He was invited as one of the 14 snowboarders in the world to compete at the Icer Air, which was a stadium jump built at the Giants Baseball Stadium in San Francisco.
Wow.
Johnny Mosley, Olympic gold medalist, was the sponsor. And this scaffold was 10 stories high. The boys were higher than the scoreboard.
Oh,
and they launched down on that ramp, which pushed them probably over, I mean, if you had a long enough speed, you'd probably be going over 40 miles an hour, which they need to hit that kicker.
Okay.
To do a double backflip, to do, Ian does a backflip and spins 1,200 degrees around, landing sometimes backwards, which is switch on a snowboard.
Okay.
And when I walked in there, I got to tell you, I felt like I swallowed a dinner plate. Oh, Lordy.
I got to see my son do that. Yeah. Oh.
But he, And not only that, he did fabulously. He ended up fifth. He was a rookie going into the competition, had not been on a snowboard for 7 months.
Many of
the other kids had been in New Zealand and in Mount Hood and in Chile, and Ian had to work all summer, so he wasn't able to do his riding.
Hmm.
But when he went into the finals, there were 32,000 people in the stadiums, and that's well over the population of our entire town here in Marquette. Mm. And he stood at that top of that ramp, and he was so composed at 21 years old that he text messaged Ron and I, who were down in the stands watching, and he sent us the message that said, "I love my life. This feels amazing."
Oh,
that's cool.
And you just think how grounded, at the same time, he was with, you know, what he had to accomplish. And so I think if you teach children to have fun, risk and reward is an important lesson of life.
Hmm.
But to let them know that their instincts, that inner voice, will tell them what's right and what's wrong.
Hmm.
Wow, that text message, if you could only, like, frame that, right? I mean, that is just, like, the biggest... I would imagine that it has to just say so much about, you know, your relationship, but mostly, like, just it's such a model of how you and your husband have parented, of, like, that at 21 he could say, "I love my life, mm-hmm. this feels amazing." Like, that is so cool.
Yeah.
It is really... And then we always learn from our children. Our daughter, Erica... is an ice climber. She's a mountain climber. She is in avalanche territory, very skilled at reading snow. And I have a difficulty with climbing, and she wants me to climb with her, and I'm really struggling with that. I know I need to do it, but I'm struggling with that. And she is so convincing at telling me that you need to let your mind experience this because it's something that you really haven't trusted yourself about yet.
Mm.
And it's really neat when your kids are going to give it back to you.
Pushing you to grow, and oh, man.
So what would you say to people listening where, you know, I think you're one of those people that tackles life head on, and you've gotten the rewards, some of the stuff you've talked about, of just some of the experiences you've been able to have. What would you say to the people who are struggling with their comfort zone, with whatever it is, you know, that they maybe have that sort of passion inside where it's like, oh, I really want to do that, or I want to follow that, but it scares the heck out of them. What would you say to those people?
First of all, don't do it alone. That's really big. I mean, I've had so many great teachers in my life. I don't learn a lot from a book. I learn from other people. I need to have someone's arm around me when I go to do anything out of the ordinary. And it's always baby steps. Mm. I mean, you don't have to go just jump off the bridge. You start with a little diving board first.
Mm-hmm.
So right. I think looking at baby steps and finding someone that can put their arm around you, you know, the organizations I'm really involved with, mountain biking and kayaking and skiing, all of those groups that kind of get people started. Certainly, you know, when you look at anything that's in the extreme sport realm, you know that that's had a long learning curve to it.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at the end result when you think about all the hours and hours of practice. You just bite it off in a baby step, and then basically you have to train your mind as well as your body to handle whatever new you're going to be doing. And that, once you do, and once you get over that hump, it's like when you learn to ride a bike. It's with you for life. And it spreads over into everything. You know, when I came back from the polar trek, I realized that if anything in my life were to challenge me like that again, and I believe everyone's going to have their own Arctic Ocean. I really do. I think I'm just better prepared now to meet those challenges with whatever it might be. So you never waste those aha moments. They definitely get banked somewhere that makes us so much stronger.
That's great advice.
Yeah, it is. That's so cool. Well, unfortunately, we would love to talk to you all day long, Frida. But I know you have stuff to get ready for and whatnot. So we're going to end with our...
Yeah, like skiing across the country or something
like that.
Yeah, I know.
There's some things coming up. But, I mean, that's what we got. We got to do that, too.
Yeah, for sure. Put that on my planner, yeah.
Well, and I invite you to, if you want to keep track, I think we're going to have, Finland is so wired. I think I'm going to be able to daily keep up with a blog. So go to fridawara.com. The blog will be there, and you can keep up with us, and I'll be telling the nitty-gritty. I don't think I'll have any photos from the sauna, but I'll be telling the nitty-gritty.
That is such a great opportunity. Thank you. We'll put that link in the show notes,
definitely,
to check out, and we'll definitely be checking and cheering you on as you make your journey. Now, we always end our interviews, Frida, with a question that connects to the person's childhood. So we are wondering, when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up? Do you remember? Uh-oh, we got giggles. That's going to be good.
Well, I always wanted to be a skier, and I guess being an outdoor writer was as close as I could get. But frankly, at 52 years old, I don't know if I've grown up yet.
Yay! That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very good thing.
Yeah, well, it's shocking to me that you'd be so passionate about your life, and lo and behold, what you wanted to be as a kid was right in line with that. So, because we believe that that's a clue. Like, whatever you wanted to be as a kid is a clue, even if it's not a direct, I mean, yours is about as direct as it can get, but even if it's not a direct thing, we think it's like, the more you drift away from that, the more unhappy you are. So the fact that you're so passionate and so excited doesn't really surprise me. I'd be more surprised if you were like, I wanted to be an architect or something like that. That would surprise me.
It is interesting. Life path, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. It is amazing. Well, we are just thrilled to have talked with you today, Frida. Thank you so much for taking your precious time. And I know.
And I applaud you and Jason so much for all that you do, because it is so important. You guys just really light the match. Strike that match and light that fire, because, I think adultitis is definitely very contagious, and people need to break out of that.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Well, I know a trip with you would certainly do it instantly. So
let's plan that.
We should. And just this podcast is going to spread that along. So thank you so much, Frida. And we'll be checking out the blog to see your adventures. And we wish you safe travels.
Oh, and stay warm. And remember, everything gets better when you get outside.
Aw, thanks, Frida.
Good food for thought. Thanks, Frida.
Oh, thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Man, what an interesting person she is, huh?
Yeah, I love her laugh, too, don't you?
Yeah, she's so got a good laugh. She's got that good accent from that. Yeah,
the UP. Awesome. So are we taking a road trip up there, or
we might have to. We might have to consider that. I think just she had so many great takeaways, I think.
About dreams.
And life and parenting.
Oh, my gosh.
That was
dense.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that, and I hope you can take a little bit of that passion out from Frida and just go with it, because
whatever your adventure is leading towards, you know, it doesn't have to be a trek across Finland.
Right. Yep. Whatever it is, go for it, because as you can tell from her, it's totally worth it.
Today, one of these lucky contestants will win his or her weight in fish. Right here on Wheel of
Fish! Oh, goody, goody! I've done a good thing, and I get a prize!
Well, we have a winner from last show's promotion.
Yeah.
We asked, what is your favorite candy of all time? And one of the responses we got back and chose as the winner was from Lisa Braithwaite. And she said that she, well, I'll just read it.
Okay.
She said, the candy I love and miss the most, Necco wafers. The creaminess, the sweet powdered sugar coating, the sophisticated flavors, including clove, cinnamon, wintergreen, and licorice. Since I became a vegetarian 18 years ago, I have not tasted a Necco. I even emailed the company at one point to ask if they would ever consider making them without gelatin, but of course they wouldn't. That's what gives them their amazing creamy, chewy, powdery texture.
Sigh. Aww. Periodically, I look at the ingredients, hoping they'll come up with a new version without the gelatin, but I know it's just a pipe dream. All I have left of my favorite Necco wafers are sweet memories. So definitely a bittersweet email, but an interesting perspective. And yeah. At least we can make up for the lack of not having Necco wafers by giving her a $20 gift certificate to the lemonade stand.
Yeah, congratulations, Lisa.
So we will get that out to her. Now, for this month, our question is, what is your favorite thing to do in the snow?
Yes.
Okay, so if you have a favorite thing to do in the snow, email us at podcast@kimandjason.com or give us a call, 608-554-0803. Chances are, if you leave a message on the Skype line, you've got a better chance of winning, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. That's fair to say. Because it'd be fun to play.
A little bit extra effort. Yeah. This is an audio medium.
And, you know, for those folks who don't live by snow or maybe have never experienced snow for whatever reason, you know, what do you think would be your favorite thing? Because, I mean, it's not like we don't see snow all over the TV and people playing it and movies like Christmas Story and everything else. So just imagine a little bit.
Yep. So let us know. What's your favorite thing to do in the snow? And we'll choose the winning entry. We'll get a $20 gift certificate to the Kim and Jason Lemonade Stand.
Welcome to KimandJason.com.
And now, here with an unlimited supply of misinformation is Mr. Know-It-All.
Well, we had a fun time last Saturday, huh?
Oh my gosh, yes. It was the first ever Kim and Jason escape event.
Was indeed.
Which, you want to explain what that is?
Well, the escape event was kind of in line with the escape plan challenges that we've done, where we came up with a challenge and we thought it would be cool to have as many people as possible try to come up with the answer to the challenge. So the challenge was Kitsch Entertainment. And the idea was to make a childlike moment in your kitchen. Mm-hmm. Could be something that you brand new or resurrect an old childhood memory. So we ourselves did it. You want to share a little bit about what we did? Because that was pretty cool.
I was so excited when Jason came up with this idea. I wish I had thought of it. But he had come up with the idea to make Shrinky Dinks, our own Shrinky Dinks, you know? Because I had the box kind of set when I was little. And I think it was strawberry shortcake, and it, you know, it was pretty close-ended. You'd color it, and then but still very cool. Okay, right. Well, we found this recipe, as you know, online to make your own, so you could draw whatever you wanted. And I made this little Pokey type character, Pokey's sister, and you made some monsters from your monsters book that you're coming out with, and it was just unbelievable, because here it is, this little plastic that you're just drawing on and coloring, and then you stick in the oven, and like in 3 minutes it's a whole different
thing. It shrinks and thickens.
Yeah, it's like,
I don't know
so
what
cool.
The big joy about it is, but when you open the oven there's something to it. I don't know what that is.
Well, it's neat to see your drawing shrunk down too, you know.
It's very tiny. Yes.
Yeah, it's very cool. And it's also kind of neat because since we put that up on the, there's a video online on the blog about it, so you can go check it out.
But probably link to that.
We'll link to it. And we have had, I don't know how many people tell us they've never even heard of Shrinky Dinks.
Yeah, like, that was kind of weird.
So I don't know if it was just a...
To be fair, I only played with them one time.
I think me too, but that, boy, I always wanted to more.
Yeah, so if you've never heard of them, cool, you can
check it out.
Try your
just
own.
Just Google Shrinky Dinks. Your eyes will be open to a whole part of childhood. But we got to use the kitchen because you have to put it in the oven. And so we sat at our kitchen table and colored. And so it was a neat combination of talents with the art thing with you. And
it was cool to see, because then we got submissions from Club K&J members all over the place, because we decided to make it into a contest.
It took forever to go through all those.
For Club K&J people where... Yeah. You know, we haven't given it away yet, but a Cuisinart ice cream maker, which is sweet. It's from Williams-Sonoma, and it's got an extra, what do they call it, container?
It's right there. Extra freezer bowl.
Yes.
Yeah, so you can actually make twice as much, or you can make another batch right after the first one.
Yep, and then we are also throwing in a Ben & Jerry's homemade dessert cookbook, which we currently have and have enjoyed. So,
yeah.
As of this particular recording, which is the end of February, the voting is still going on.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on when you listen to this, it might be over with. But we narrowed it down to six finalists. which all came up with some very creative ideas. And so we'll, of course, have a link to that in the show notes for you to check those out. And it was just a lot of fun. So
we have a bunch of pictures to look through and a couple of videos people submitted. Yep. And
I'm always already looking forward to the next one. So I don't know what it will be, but we'll see. So
probably in a couple months we'll do another one. So, but it was definitely something. I heard a lot of great feedback from the people who submitted, just saying, thank you so much for this opportunity to do something childlike. And to know that all these people were doing it on the same day was just kind of fun.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
There it is. The holy grail of Christmas gifts, the Red Ryder 200-shot range model air rifle.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
That is so cool.
Cool.
Oh, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen.
All right, I've got our cool thing, something cool to help you escape adulthood. Talking all this wintry subject matter today, I thought it would be fun to talk about our little mismatched gloves, okay? What these are is it's, okay, you can't say a pair of gloves, which is normally what you'd say, but it's like gloves, except there's three, okay? Not a pair, there's three. And
three gloves.
All three of them are different. Like, they match, like, they complement one another, but they don't match. So it is just...
I think you're confusing the listener.
It's very hard to explain.
Well, here's what happens. You have a pair of gloves, and how often do you put them in your pocket and one slips out?
Right.
It's gone.
Yep.
You know? How cool would it be to have another glove?
Right.
To make up for that. And the other thing is all three gloves are different, like you said, different colors. So you can mix and match.
Right.
You can let your creative side come
out. Do you want the green and blue one and the orange and pink one? Or do you want, you know, you can just mix it up. And so it kind of fits that whole what's your mood, what are you in the mood for? And how fun is it to have that extra glove to be able to rely on when you lose the other one, too?
Right.
So very playful. As a girl, I have to say, and not that guys wouldn't feel this way, but Jason usually doesn't, they're super, super soft and nice to feel. And so I know Jason's a tough guy. He doesn't care about that stuff.
They are soft.
I love them. So I like to rub them on my face, and that's just a girl thing. So, or a guy thing, too. Depends on who you are.
Yes, yeah. Well,
so, anyway, check
them
out.
One of the many cool things we have at our, excuse me, lemonade stand, cool stuff for the inner heart. So, good
check
choice.
Check it out. Yeah.
Okay, so we're at the part of the show where we reveal the Mindbender answer.
Okay.
The question was, how many inches of snowfall, about how many inches of snowfall does Antarctica receive per year?
I'm pretty confident about this.
You confidently suggested 250 inches.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
The answer is, it snows about 2 inches per year over most of Antarctica.
Two,
yes.
I thought I said that there was a warm place, and you were like, oh,
it is. It's
cold.
It's caked in ice. For instance, the coldest temperature ever recorded on Earth was in Antarctica, -128.6 below zero, 128.6 degrees Fahrenheit. That's below zero. So I don't even want to guess at what the wind chill was. But
so
that's
is it
fascinating.
Too cold to snow or what?
You know, I don't know. I have no idea.
What did you guess before you read it?
I read it before I guessed. But I thought it was quite remarkable that the only 2 inches, because it's white. It's all snow all
right.
the time. But apparently it's mostly, well, think about this. When it snows, it's not like it's melting anytime soon.
Okay.
So, and I don't know. I have to do some research, because there was something about... question of is it too cold, ever too cold to snow? So
okay.
That could be.
Well, and
the
I want to know, the other question I have is how many inches is at the North Pole?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because I was kind of judging it how I thought the North Pole would be, because quite honestly, I don't know much about the South Pole. So I just know a lot about the North Pole because of Santa.
Okay.
So
South Pole is, you know, there's a whole continent down there.
I know, but I just don't know much about it.
Okay.
I'm going to be honest.
Might be something you might want to look into. Get that
childlike curiosity
going there.
And I'm being honest. Childlike honesty.
There you go. So 2 inches per year. That's about how much most of Antarctica gets.
Boy,
I was
a bit off.
A little bit. That's okay.
What's up, Doc?
Yeah.
Now, this won't hurt a bit.
Okay, so today's prescription is basically make a point to quit complaining about the weather. That was one thing I really appreciated about Frida, is she was so enthusiastic about the snow.
Yeah.
And I am tired of the snow, but I'm more tired of the people complaining about the snow.
Right.
That's really the thing. And so there seems to be this unwritten rule that we always have to be aggravated over the weather, whatever mm-hmm. it is. And even yeah. if you live in a hot place, like, oh, it's so hot. It's like, whoever said that, that's what has to be our small talk, is to, like, complain about the weather.
It's just common.
Do we realize how much that negativity is bringing us down? It's like then making us look at the other negative aspects of our life, and that's just not good for anybody. So spend your energy today looking on the bright side. You know, whether it's raining or snowing or heat, think of the good thing, focus on that, and don't be tricked into dwelling on the negative. It's not doing you or anybody else any good.
Well, that's it for today's show. Be sure to check out escapeadulthood.com for today's show notes featuring links to some of the things we talked about here today. For Jason, this is Kim signing off from Madison, Wisconsin. Thanks for listening, and remember, it's never too late to have a second childhood.
It's a little childish and stupid, but then so is high school.